This podcast is brought to you by Innovid and their Harmony Initiative. Innovid believes that TV should be open for everyone and controlled by no one. And the time to make that vision a reality is now. That's why Innovid created Harmony, an industry-wide initiative to address the biggest challenges facing CTV advertising today. By optimizing at the infrastructure level, Harmony aims to improve efficiency, enhance transparency and control, and increase ROI, all while reducing carbon emissions and providing better viewing experiences for all. Find out more and get involved at innovid.com/harmony. Welcome to the Marketecture Podcast. This is Ari Papero, and I'm here today with Eric Franchi and Hollis Guerra, the SVP of DBC Brand Communications. But she's so well-known, we could just go by single name. Everyone knows Hollis. Isn't that right, Hollis?
That is right. I mean, after 18 years in the ad tech industry, I think it suits me, yeah.
So we're excited to get a conversation going with you about PR, what ad tech companies should be doing, what they do wrong, what they do right, things like that. Hopefully this will be a fun, interesting conversation. First, some quick housekeeping. So this week, we debuted our first vendor interview about the IAB Tech Lab. The IAB Tech Lab is celebrating a 10-year anniversary. So this week, the content was about TCF, the Transparency and Control Framework. And next week, we have a fun episode because I get the tables turned on me and I'm the interviewee. And Tony Katzer interviews me about the VAS standards. That's coming out on Monday. And all the IAB Tech Lab interviews are available without a paywall permanently. So if you want to listen to them or send them to your colleagues, you should. All right. Ad tech PR. So people probably just come to you, Hollis, and say, I want more press. Why can't I have more press? So why can't they have more press?
Okay. There is things that are nice to know, and it's nice, but is it really news? And everyone wants press, but there's really a better way to think about it. You know, you come to an agency like DBC Brand Communications, and we help you distill and understand what is actually of value. So you might want press, but would somebody really care about it? Is it really interesting? You need to place things in the context of how and why it could impact, like, the allocation of dollars, what it signifies to the larger trend or importance in the industry. So when you're working in ad tech and you're working with a PR agency, it's really understanding what's going to move the needle in the marketplace and what's important and what do people care about? What are your audiences really looking for? So you really need to just not want to think about putting your name out in the marketplace, but what's behind it? What's the value that you're bringing and why should someone care?
Right. So if I add my 15th verification vendor to my DSP and as a partnership, that would probably be an example that nobody cares about, right?
Exactly. I mean, look, the end users are really, you know, they're people. So what's interesting to the readers when you're working with these editors and reporters that we've worked with? I mean, I've worked with some of these since 2006. You know, it's really understanding what are they interested in? What do they know that their readers are interested in? So if there's something to you that is really important, that's great. You know, and we want to celebrate that. But there's other ways to do that, like on your own blog or in just a tweet out here in social media. But if you're actually looking, because PR in a sense is really an extension of your sales and your marketing team. And we're there to help generate brand awareness and air cover so that the marketplace has an understanding of who you are. And so when you're speaking with your target audiences, they understand. They already have awareness of who your company is or who the CEO is or what you bring and what value you have. So, you know, we help distill and share like what you should really be thinking about. And what a reporter is going to want to know.
So things have changed a lot since 2006, and particularly maybe since like the 2010, where you saw the explosion of, I think, trade publications. So it was always Ad Age and Ad Week, and then you had Ad Exchanger and Digiday and so on and so forth. And people got their news largely by visiting these sites. Today, you know, 2024, things are a lot different. There's less publications. There's less reporters and editors at publications. People get their news from other people. They get their news from social and newsletters and so on and so forth. And there's just a lot of other channels that a company can get their word out from. So How's your practice evolved? And how, you know, how do you think about media in an age where it's frankly on the decline? I mean, something we've been talking about on this pod for, you know, since we started.
It's difficult, right? You've got the journalists out there, there are publications, there's so much turnover, and it's really, it's, they're strapped for time, you know? So the biggest thing I would say for anyone out there wanting to sort of understand, especially in this new age of journalism, there's only so many people, there's only so much time to cover certain stories. So understanding what the reporters are looking for and the editors are looking for is most important. I'd also say the third party validation you get from speaking with journalists and having your point of view out there in stories is going to really up-level your brand and your credibility and your trust in the marketplace, because it's different from just putting news out on LinkedIn or on Twitter or X. You know, you're working with these reporters and these editors, and they are telling the largest story. They see more of what's happening in the industry. So I think it's difficult and there's a decline, but they need our support, most definitely.
So how do you position a CEO as an expert? I know that now I'm on the receiving end as, you know, as the head of Marketecture. I'm getting these emails every day from PR people that say, so-and-so is an expert at analytics and understanding the advertising landscape. And I'm just like, oh, give me a break. I need another one of those. Like, I need a hole in my head. How do you convince, like, a reporter that so-and-so should be on their short list for comments on the latest activities of Google, let's say?
Well, okay, that's a great question. A lot of it's going to come by actually understanding their experience, and do they have a counterintuitive or an interesting take on the matter or a POV? I can give you a great case study I worked with. I think everyone might know him at this point, but Matt Barish at this old company of his called Ad Colony. And him and I worked together essentially to get him to the place he's at now. So we hatched a whole plan with the press and identifying key topics that he could speak to, his POVs, development of his, you know, executive profile bench, basically his, and what he could go out there and talk to, and started developing the relationships. That's the other really, really big important part to this, is that press are people. Read what they are writing, understand what they are covering, understand what they are looking for. There's one thing to just be pitching constantly, but there's more to actually showcase, like, hey, I read this article that you wrote and I know what you're talking about. Have you thought of it this way? And developing those relationships, you know, and now to this point, you know, Matt has all these people just calling him all the time and they're friends. And that was something that we went out and we developed together. So finding the right PR agency and the partner and working with the marketing team is what really can help.
So you're responsible for Matt Barish. That's what we found out through this conversation.
Yeah. And actually, just so you know, Ari, when I was prepping for this call, Matt was like, I want you to tell that story and you can take full credibility for who I am today.
All right. We have a, you know, we love Matt. He's a regular listener and we've probably mentioned him on the pod more than any other human being who's not been a guest. We're going to just see how long we could go without having him as a guest.
Actually having him on. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe our 100th episode.
It's important though, to really, to break through. I mean, just to close the point is that if you're a CEO, if you're someone, you know, one of the clients and you want to get out there talking, it's our job to also help identify why you would be a great addition to a story, to a podcast. I mean, Ari, you've featured a lot of our clients, so I thank you for that. I guess what we're doing works, but yeah.
I welcome your pitches.
Thank you.
So what's the good, bad, and ugly here in terms of, you know, we want to hear what your experience is like. You know, what do CEOs or head of marketing come to you with that is just, you know, cringy versus, you know, what really works? You don't have to name names.
I won't name names, but it kind of goes back to that first point of something might be nice, but is it news? And really understanding who is the target audience and what their needs are. People will still make, you know, their decisions based on some emotions, you know, outside of rationale. So how are you really connecting with them? And what is it that you're trying to tell? There's clients that just want to push their products and that's great, but there's got to be more to it. What's the actual story? Why is this important? what does it signify in the marketplace? Where is the industry heading? What sort of trends are out there? It's great sometimes when we get things placed that we didn't think we necessarily would, but it's really taking a PR agency's direction. So our job is as a consultant and to guide you. And so we want to work with partners. You want to work with partners that will listen and collaborate, not just about highlighting and selling the company or selling the product, but the reason behind it and identifying the challenges and,
right.
what's important.
What's an example, though? Do you have an example, even whether it's a client of yours disclosed that or a different client that has gone from basic product story to interesting story?
Oh, okay, great. So, well, the holy grail is if you've got a product announcement with a case study. And if you've got a client and you've got third-party validation where, you know, we talk to AdExchanger all the time, right? Allison and the team, they're amazing. We cannot just bring them a product announcement. There's nothing to it. Cool, you can do this. It's terrible if it's like a, oh, we can do this 6 months after everyone else already announced that they can. But what's really great is, hey, we've got a client and we've got a case study and we've got results and we can show you, you know, why this is important and the value of it. I'd say that's also the most challenging, because not every customer wants to share, you know, behind the scenes and share those results. So that's the hardest part, I think, sometimes. You know, we're up against it. We see it constantly, or we get clients coming in or potential clients where they say, we have the story, but we can't really tell it. So what else can we do? How else can we generate brand awareness?
And when you talk about the mainstream media, like New York Times, Wall Street Journal, a lot of startups, especially well-funded ones, want to get there. And it feels to me like whenever I've broached that or talked to reporters from those organizations, it's always like, what does this have to do with Google, Facebook, or Apple? If you don't have an angle that talks to one of those companies, I'm pretty uninterested, even with the case study. Has that been your experience as well?
Yes and no. You should understand the reporters before you pitch them. So if you're seeing like one of them at the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, they're just covering, you know, the ABCs, there's going to be someone else. The other way to get around that, I would say, is, okay, how does it affect those marketplace? How does it affect those industries? How does it affect those companies? Can you speak to it and provide something counterintuitive? The general business, I would say, the larger effort it takes to get into those publications, it's like a slow roll. You've got to build the relationships. You've got to provide value. And it's not going to be immediate gratification of, we've got an announcement, you're going to cover it. A lot of the times they're looking for the larger marketplace significance, and especially around allocation of dollars. What is this really moving, and what does it mean to the industry, and how is this going to change the marketplace or change the dynamic outside of just, okay, we'll cover you.
Right, right. Sometimes I've seen articles in mainstream news articles about startups I really just don't care about. And you're like, how did that get there? You know, how did this weird little ad network based in Israel suddenly end up in the New York Times? I'm not naming names, but or something like that. I'm sure you have some behind the scenes stories, but I'm not sure if you're prepared to share.
Did they pay for it? Because I would also definitely check that byline as if it was paid for. Yeah.
Well, the Times and the Journal don't do paid, right? Except for special inserts and things like that.
Yeah. You know, I mean, so long ago, there was a period of time where I just had a lot of younger startups come. It was interesting. They were kind of like these like drive-by clients. I mean, one of my first clients was Blue Lithium. Like that was acquired by Yahoo, like right out of the gate, like my first 6 months at a PR agency. You know, so I think that when you see some of those and you wonder, how did they get in there, or what was it that was special about them? When you think back about what that pitch might have looked like, it's probably also a relationship based on some relationships that the reporter had. Those go such a long way. But then they must have had something different about them. Like there really must be something different. A great one is like Basket Entertainment. They are now pivoting into a creative agency. You know, they came out of the gate working with Roblox, the small little startup on the West Coast in gaming. And, you know, they got into the Forbes, you know, ones to watch. And I think that helps goes a long way. So don't discount also accolades or awards or things that you can pinpoint of like, all right, I'm a startup and, you know, I've just gotten, well, especially if you just got a lot of money, you know, if you did a big raise or something, those big numbers can really help.
PR is hard to quantify, right? The impact of it. That's probably a thing that's, you know, an ongoing challenge. Are there any metrics that you point to show the effectiveness or maybe lack thereof of a media hit? And how do you like maximize the value of it? Like, is there technology you're using? Are you, innovating on metrics? Just kind of curious about the state of PR measurement and tech.
That's a great question, because whenever you're in the discovery process of a new prospect, that's one of the number one questions is, how do you actually measure public relations? We do it a couple of different ways. I mean, ultimately it comes down to, have you gotten any new business? You know, did someone see this podcast that you were on and reach out and want to work with you? So you can certainly drive metrics from those types of engagements. We also monitor things like share of voice, share of voice against competitors, share of voice. We use different Google Analytics tools for that, or these other companies like Meltwater and Cision. Another one, sometimes their clients, they just want hits. They just want, all right, we want 5 hits in top tier business and trade publications. And that's all that they're really looking for. And so we can measure against those sort of numbers. I've had some clients in the past actually give each publication their own personal ranking. And then, all right, where we mentioned 50% in this article. So you can get very specific with all of it, but it should really come down to, is PR supporting the business?
So Eric and I invest in a lot of early stage companies. I mean, Eric's a professional investor. I'm wasting my money slowly. What's the playbook for the small company that's, let's just assume, not hiring an agency? Doing it themselves.
Yeah. So it's interesting, because sometimes they come too late, they want to go right out the gate. I think the playbook should really be by starting to have all your ducks in a row. Do you have your messaging? Are you telling an interesting narrative? Can you clearly say who you are and what you do and what challenges you solve for without all the jargon? How quickly does it actually get to that point? And then you really want to have a well thought out go to market. How are you coming out of the gate? Are you announcing a raise? Are you announcing, a new VC firm or funding? Do you have clients on board? And getting out before that. So having that plan and then thinking beyond that initial go to market, what is your rolling plan? Because some come out right away with a big one hit, but then you don't hear from them for a couple of months. So continuing that drumbeat of momentum, I think, is really important, which is why have a plan, have a quarterly or a biannual plan.
I feel like a lot of ad tech startups have positive vibes in their messaging, and then some have negative vibes in their messaging. Like, their core messaging is like, we're here to defeat the walled gardens, freeing the world from the clutches of so-and-so. How do you feel about negative vibe messaging?
I mean, I'm slightly against it, because why beat down others when you should really be building up positively yourself and your company? There's just you might get attention that way, but especially I feel like in this industry and in ad tech, everyone is sort of frenemies, So when we ask potential new clients who their competitors are, it can be like, oh, we have no competitors, or there's just the big ones. So what's your messaging really against that? And does it serve you better, or is it just to take them down?
Last topic I wanted to talk about is crisis management, or handling the bad news. So what should you do when you wake up in the morning and Adalytics has published a report about you?
They shouldn't be on your door in the first place. But okay, crisis communication. I mean, it's really a crisis of trust. So before this even happens, you should have built a lot of goodwill in advance and have a greater equity of trust in your brand. The big thing with crisis communication, I feel, is the trouble is not reacting knowing when to react and when not to react, and doing the opposite of that is a real big problem. So sometimes people react when they shouldn't because of high emotional anxiety. And every company should really have, prior to any potential issue, a decision framework already prepared. So when you know how and when to respond in a crisis, planning in advance. Anytime we have clients going to market, maybe it's Cadent and Adtherent. So Cadent, of course, is one of our clients. And with their acquisition underway, having those FAQs, having those documents prepared. I worked with OpenAP in the past, and when they were going out with all their news, we always had these documents of, what's going on, what's not going on, how does this impact, just simple speaking topics. But you should have that for anything and have a plan if, how, when you should respond. A lot of times I feel like people have a missed opportunity and they don't respond when they should. And then you're just kind of letting everyone down. It's kind of like, okay, maybe the CEO didn't respond the right way. They were very quiet or they said the wrong thing. So having those ducks in a row before and then having sort of your team in place, I think is really important.
Yeah, you bring up the CEO thing. We had Joe Zappo on the show a month or so ago, and he was making the point that it doesn't need to be the CEO, but you should have someone in your executive team who's publicly on social. But we've seen that backfire too with CEOs who are, you know, maybe a little prickly or not very fact-based in their responses. I'm not naming names, but just in general, it could go either way. What sort of advice do you give on that subject?
You know, I know Joe's whole, like the whole chief evangelist, right? I think there were some stats that I was reading where like 75% of senior executives believe that having a CEO on social gives the brand more credibility. Maybe your CEO though isn't the right person. Maybe there is someone else, but having a presence is really important. I think that CEOs, there was another stat about 81% believe that their socially active CEOs are better equipped to lead companies. They'd rather work for a CEO who engages with people on social media. They're just more personable. But, you know, there are some that can go off the rails. So I think your PR team or your marketing team should also be engaged to make sure that it's the right person. Maybe they need some media training and what's right to share, what's, you know, we you don't want to share. But I do think it's important. I think it's important to have that brand visibility to build that credibility, trust, and humanize the brand and the person.
Yeah, I can say from my personal experience as the CEO of Beeswax, it was our number one source of sales leads was my social or my LinkedIn. And we only lost like two or three clients because of obnoxious things I said. So overall, I think it's kind of positive. All right, let's take a break, and we're going to come back with the news of the week. Tons of earnings and lots of interesting things going on, so we'll be right back. This podcast is brought to you by Rain Barrel. Rain Barrel is a cookieless consented audience graph that helps advertisers interact with their best fit customers. Digital advertising shouldn't be a black box, which is why Rain Barrel was created by media buyers for media buyers. With over 12,000 public audiences, Rain Barrel has helped renowned brands like a large golf retailer explode their campaign reach by millions just by tapping into the right audience for golf course and country club visitors. Try out Rain Barrel audiences on DV360, The Trade Desk, LiveRamp, and beyond, or learn more at rbarrel.com. That's rbarrel.com.
And we're back. News of the week, and we have a big news week. Maybe we'll jump right into earnings. We're recording this on Wednesday, May 8th, and it just hit 4 o'clock p.m., so we don't have TTT earnings. We'll cover that either in the newsletter or next week. We have a bunch of stuff to go over today. So we'll kind of blow through a couple of the earnings reports that didn't necessarily move the market or move stocks, then we'll get to a couple of biggies. So Perion beat expectations. Stock was up 5% as of this writing. They did $157 million for the quarter. CTV retail media up over 100% year over year. Digital out of home up 25% year over year from the Hivestack acquisition. They were unfortunately down like 60%. So they've got a ways to make up, but they've got some great growth areas. Innovid revenue was up 21% year over year to $36.7 million. Raised guidance for the year. Stock was up a bit this morning. And PubMatic also, same thing, revenue up 20% year over year to $66.7 million. A couple of interesting things on the PubMatic front. So SPO is 50% of their marketplace activity, and video and mobile are actually up as part of their business, probably not surprisingly, 26%. Okay, all right, those are the three. Now we'll talk about some of the ones that are moving the market or moving the stocks. So first is DoubleVerify. So DoubleVerify, they reported slightly lower growth than the other companies we just talked about, up 15% to $140 million for the quarter. A couple of interesting things happening below the surface. So measurement revenue was up 19%. Social measurement was up 51%. CTV up 45%. So where are the likely areas of growth were? But they forecasted their year down from 22% growth to 17% growth, and you know, pointed to a couple of big clients pulling back. The stock got absolutely hammered, unfortunately. Started the day at a $5 billion-ish market cap, and as of this recording, it was like a $3 billion-ish market cap, so down 40%. And just as a comp, their you know, closest competitor, IAS, trades at $1.5 billion. So DV just got hammered today, unfortunately. No other way to say it. Interestingly, on the call, Schiff from AdExchanger had a great post on this. You should check it out. No talk about Forbes 3. No talk about X, even though there was growth in social for them. So thoughts on DV, if any?
Yeah, I'll start by saying both DV and IAS were very, very rich valuations, sort of value to perfection. And if you look at the fundamentals, I don't see the picture there. They're fairly well penetrated into their addressable market. You know, most agencies and clients who want a vendor like this probably have one. They're predominantly in the display business, which, as we've discussed multiple times, is flat or down. Because it's a duopoly, there's inevitable pricing pressure on margins. And the innovation, the new products, haven't really been there. You know, DV bought Scibids, which is an opportunity, but they have to prove it. IAS bought Publica, opportunity, need to prove it. It wasn't obvious to me why either of these stocks should have been really, really richly valued rather than valued as sort of value stocks.
What do they need to do from here?
Innovate. New products. They have the most valuable thing you can have in ad tech, which is tag on the page. Their tag is on every creative. Anything that CMO wants, you can give them because you have the tag on the page. You can measure stuff. You could optimize stuff. You can do all kinds of stuff. That's what they should be looking at. They should be doing carbon measurement. They should be doing all kinds of stuff that should be pretty easy, frankly, for them to implement or to acquire. And I just haven't been impressed with the level of innovation.
Got it.
I know also, you know, some people think it was a little bit of an overreaction in the marketplace. And now it's kind of time for investors to dive a little bit deeper into the business. And I think there's still an opportunity that, you know, it's going to end up being just fine in the long run. So this is just maybe a potential moment of down.
Got it. Okay. We'll keep going. Zeta Interactive is now among the highest market cap ad tech companies at $3.3 billion. Has this been happening and we just haven't been paying attention? Or is this a new thing?
I challenge you or anyone you know to explain what Zeta Interactive does. Maybe it's a PR problem.
It could be.
They just print money. I've worked with this company before. I've talked to them many times. I've been to their office. I should know what they do. And I even read their documents online and I read their press releases. I still don't know what they do. They have like a database and then they sell it somehow and maybe they buy some ads on it. I don't know, but they're printing money. And you know who has been on this beat is Tom Trescari. He talks about Zeta a lot, mostly in the scratching his head as to what the hell they're up to form. But his newsletter has talked about Zeta's outsized valuation multiple times. I'm at a total loss.
Yeah. No, it's not in the set of companies that we usually track. I guess we should. They have made a lot of acquisitions over the years, a bunch of disparate assets, including Discus, which is, an old school like commenting engine at the bottom of the page, tags on page. So I don't know how much Discus plays into this versus some of their other stuff. I did a quick search when we were just talking about this, and it touts a CDP. So I think they got a lot under the hood and maybe a bunch of assets that are contributing in a holdco-like manner. But I don't know. We'll keep it going. So finally, we have the first earnings report out of Reddit. So Reddit had an awesome quarter. $243 million total revenue, up 48% year over year, with ads revenue, the vast majority of that, $222 million, ads were up 39% year over year. Two things here that are interesting. You know, number one, they credited much of the increase to a Google change. We're going to talk about this in a second, that drove more traffic to Reddit, increasing the number of users. And then also, AI, they're developing AI tools that allow small businesses to advertise on Reddit. So following the Google and Facebook playbook of targeting the small advertisers, stock was up a bunch as of this writing. And then the other interesting thing, and we'll again talk about this in a second, the non-advertising revenue is a data licensing that they're doing to help feed LLMs. So good quarter out of Reddit. Is Reddit on the radar?
Yeah, I mean, Hollis could probably confirm this, but the number one rule about going public is that you have to nail your first earnings.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, I think it's still, you know, the profit is a wait and see, but I think good for them. But I've also had clients be acquired by Reddit, so I'm a fan.
Got it. Okay, cool. So how this plays into some other stuff we want to talk about. So Brian Morrissey over at the Rebooting, he had this epic newsletter. I feel like everything Brian writes is like epic, but he had this epic newsletter about SERP. What is SERP? Search engine result pages, largely like the natural search results or all the search results you get when you do a Google search. And Google is making changes that are hitting publishers hard. And when you dig into it, it's for articles that, you know, we've talked about before that are increasingly like the lifeblood of a publisher business. So high monetization keywords, some of the couponing pages, some of the affiliate links. So publishers who are trying to increase their revenue by diversifying their mix of non-display and programmatic ad revenue by going into things like content and commerce and affiliate and couponing are getting hit by Google. Now, interestingly, and this is why it connects to Reddit, Reddit has been rising in this whole era of you know, kind of the SERP changes. And some people are pointing to the fact that Google's got a licensing deal, Reddit that feeds some of this LLM stuff, but I don't know. Either way, some of the, and everybody should read this article or link to it in the newsletter, the traffic declines for some of the premium publishers are down like major double digits. So New York Times down 45%, CNN down 27%. This is like really bad for publishers.
Yeah, and it's really hard to get your hands around what these stats really mean because search engine optimization is such a dark art. But it definitely appears that Google is taking aim at the problem that has been brought up quite a bit this year, which is their search results for valuable topics are being corrupted by affiliate links. And so if you do a search for top toasters, you're going to more likely than not find a web page that's on like a Forbes or another journalistic enterprise that's rehashing real reviews from other people as opposed to linking directly to the review itself. So maybe this is a good thing for the overall health of the web and health of Google, but it in the short term is yet another sort of kidney punch to the people in the basement trying to make more money off of those web pages. I think this also ties into kind of the next. Well, there's a story that's not in our notes that I just heard this morning that is being kind of widely speculated that OpenAI is going to release a search engine next week, which will be an interesting sort of shot across the bow to Google, as well as to Bing, as well as to Perplexity and other companies. And then another story that is in our notes about Meredith Dotdash talking about AI. So, Eric, do you want to kind of stitch that one together for us?
Yeah, let's complete the thought on Meredith in a second. How does this explain New York Times going down 45% in traffic from Google? Because New York Times has Wirecutter. They're not gaming search results, you know, like what you pointed to before. I don't think they're running like coupon pages. Like, is there an explanation? I'm not asking you for the explanation. Has there been an explanation about like why like New York Times and CNN, you know, who aren't necessarily, to our knowledge, delving into this stuff, why are they getting caught?
You know, there's an interesting like kind of conversation going around navigating the age of AI as it relates to SEO and Google search generative experience, and how that's going to affect publishers, but then also what brand marketers should be doing. Because, you know, now you're putting something into Google and instead of going to the New York Times to get the review, you know, you're just getting potentially something generated and you don't need to necessarily go to these publishers, you know, but then where's the trust? Is it correct? You know, what does this really mean? And then for, you know, clicks, you know, how is the measurement, you know, how's that going to impact measurement? This is just a topic that I just started delving into on Monday, so still pretty new to it, but it's pretty fascinating when you think about it in the terms of as it relates to, you know, this conversation and what's it going to mean for content strategy moving forward, you know, the shift in search, like how is SEO and brand visibility going to change with, you know, things like Google and AI and all of that.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in AI optimization as the next frontier, and it's an area where you could do some interesting startup activity if you could crack the nut on what it means. because content is being produced for human readers, and human readers are not the correct audience moving forward. So you can have quite a bit more length, for example, and detail in the content you're producing. But in the question, why is the New York Times down so much? I have no idea. I mean, reading SEO is like, it's like, why is it raining? I don't know. It's raining. Someone at Google knows.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Okay. What does this all have to do with AI? So two things here we'll talk about with AI this week. First is, so Meredith Dotdash, which owns a bunch of publishers, a bunch of longtime publishers, both digitally with sort of native print like People and About.com, like an incredible portfolio. We had their head of strategy on a few months ago. They announced a deal with OpenAI. So they're going to be licensing their data to OpenAI, and they're going to be working together on some new products. I think, you know, leveraging LLMs for their own contextual targeting. So I think this is interesting from a couple perspectives. Number one, you know, this then becomes a potentially new, although much smaller right now, revenue stream that publishers have, you know, to augment or supplement or stave off the dying of, you know, a display ad business. It's sort of thing one. Thing two is Reddit, which is another company that has, you know, sort of like an OG bank of data, because Reddit's now, you know, 20 years old of people creating content. They're the other one that has a notable licensing deal with OpenAI. So I think it's kind of interesting in that OpenAI is intentionally working with some of these digital native properties that have been around not for a year or two, but for decades to help train their models.
Yeah, I think it's worth knowing MDD, Meredith Dotdash, is a very healthy, profitable company. And one of the ways they've gotten there is by focusing on content that's both useful and advertising friendly. They don't write news, to be just totally frank. They're not covering the day's events. They're writing useful content that is focused on certain verticals that they know monetize very well. And I think that's maybe a trend to look at, which is news, which is incredibly important to society and to democracy, et cetera, has a very short shelf life. It's not very valuable over time. And it often covers topics that advertisers don't want to be associated with. Whereas what used to be called service journalism, you know, the best lipstick to wear, you know, for a night out, that sort of thing from Cosmo, that stuff actually is becoming a lot more valuable both to the AI and to the advertising community.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And then maybe that, you know, largely explains Reddit, which in addition to all the chaos of Reddit, like if you're looking for an answer on basically anything, increasingly like Reddit has threads that, you know, can point you to the right answer there. So I think that's an interesting thought on why this, you know, might make sense and why, you know, you might see more of these, I don't know, you call them utility publishers or service journalism, right? Getting more of these licensing deals.
It certainly comes up higher on my search results now. Reddit does. So back to the SEO, it's coming up for any of those interesting questions that you might have.
Just to turn this to Hollis and to the area of PR, how does this tie into vendors doing their own content production? Because sort of content development has been sort of a easy trick for getting better search engine results because you're talking about the topic you want to talk about. Do you think that's going to continue in the future with AI, or is there too much clutter?
No, I think it will continue. I think actually AI will help it, you know, especially depending on how you're utilizing it. But, you know, for developing your own content, I mean, it goes back to, is it nice or is it news? And those are great places to put, you know, out what you need to. And we have clients who just, sometimes you just got to get things out for SEO enhancement. And it's just the nature of the beast, but it still helps move the needle. And then you can kind of, that's the place where if you have a CEO who wants to put out something on a topic, but they're not really saying anything different, or it's too self-promotional, that's great. Put it out yourself, and then take the more counterintuitive, you know, bylines and get those placed and earned placements. But it's still definitely a useful form of public relations and marketing.
Final bit on AI. So Amazon launches Performance Plus, and Ara, you pointed to U of Digital for being the first to make a joke about the name. I didn't see the tweet. What was the joke?
In the U of Digital newsletter is a must read if you're in this business. They did a meme making fun of the fact that Performance Plus is almost the most generic, ridiculous name you could give this when their competitors Google and Meta have very similarly named products. But, you know, you don't always have to be innovative. just use the name that's just sitting there. It's fine.
You don't have to reinvent the wheel. If it's working, it's working.
It's a good point, right? So it's PMax, Performance Max, Advantage Plus for Meta. You mash them together, you get Performance Plus.
It's like airline mile programs, you know, Advantage Plus.
Exactly. It's neat though, because it's the sort of last of the triopoly that have yet to debut, a custom algorithmic bidding product that is going to be set and forget it for their customers. And as we've seen with PMax and Advantage Plus, these become multi-billion-dollar run rate businesses pretty quickly. So it's definitely something to keep an eye on. With that, I think that's the news of the week. Want to take us home?
Absolutely. It was a great conversation. So Eric, thanks for that. Hollis, thank you so much for giving your perspective on PR for ad tech. How can people find you? The usual places, LinkedIn, X?
Usual places, LinkedIn, X, DottieBrand.com for DBC Agency. I am one of those people who is easily accessible and out there. So hope to see you all soon. This was fun. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here. And thanks for listening.
Thank you for subscribing to Marketecture. New interviews are added every week at Marketecture.tv and your favorite podcasting app.